Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 65, featuring our good friend Boris Samandov, who is an employee of Chaos Group and is a pretty cool guy. I love Boris. He's a great guy. Stephen Parker is joining me for the intro. Why don't you tell people who Boris is, Stephen?
I will tell you everything I know about Boris. He's an international man of mystery.
Yes.
The first time I met him, he was wearing bright yellow pants.
Yes, he was.
And talking some crazy stuff about exascale computing and, you know, what the cloud means. And,
yep.
He had some pretty great ideas about, you know, the future of image synthesis and, you know, hardware as a service.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So we should let people know, he's actually the product manager for V-Ray Cloud. Which came out of him, you know, working on V-Ray App SDK, correct? So, yes. So that is really, there's a lot of questions when it comes to cloud, and we figured we might as well make a podcast of it. The podcast itself is going to be a teaser for a paper we're going to write called The Guide to Cloud. So that's coming out soon as well. Figured we want to let people know what it's about and have a better understanding of it, because there's a lot of questions. We have people in the architecture field and the visual effects field and the design field all sort of wondering how cloud is going to affect them. And so we figured might as well let people know. There's a lot of questions about the cost, a lot of questions about security, about infrastructure. So we figured we might as well help people understand all of these things. So it was a really kind of an interesting podcast. Do you have any thoughts about cloud, Stephen?
I do. I have several thoughts on it. I mean, I'm not historically haven't been a big fan of, you know, us going full circle back to dummy terminals and mainframes, but I think that what's happening is just sort of a step along the way. Like, you know, right now we're able to spin up a bunch of machines and have them do things and
right.
independently of one another.
Right.
And, you know, for our industry, that solves some problems and also causes some other ones.
Sure.
Just in the sense that, you know, you still have to be sitting on a fast line to get your data there. But I think what's interesting is what's going to happen next, which is, you know, when those individual machines aren't acting independently of one another, when you've got shared memory and,
yeah,
you know, heterogeneous
giant computers,
hardware, yep, and it's just
giant virtual computers
able to do, yeah, I mean, able to, you know, create virtual worlds.
Yeah. So it's going to be, I think it's really, really interesting to think about that. And I talk about it quite a bit with him. So hopefully you guys will be able to get some information out of this. A couple of announcements. Stephen and I will be going to GTC, which is in San Jose. It's the GPU Technology Conference. It's pretty interesting. A lot of the developers are going to this as well. Blago and his team of GPU developers are going, as well as Vlado is going as well. And it should be a lot of fun. At the end of April, I will be at FMX. I will be talking on a panel about digital humans. It is hosted by Mike Seymour, and there'll be other members of the Digital Human League that will be there as well. So please come by and say hi if you're there. I'll probably be recording some podcasts while I'm in Stuttgart at the same time. All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passé. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
My head's empty.
Is your head in the cloud, Boris?
Yeah, maybe.
All right. So, you and I have had these really great conversations, but we have. What was cool about this last time is you started talking about the idea of what cloud is, and.
Yeah.
We're going to make obviously a paper about this. So this is going to be a sort of a teaser to what the guide to cloud in a sense, right? But I want to start off with a couple of ideas that we talked about that I think were really useful. One is
what you help define is like when you define a cloud, you actually define different parts to it, right? So
yep.
There's three parts that you mentioned that are part of cloud: virtual machine, data, and job management, right?
Yes.
So those are the three parts. So let's start with...
These are actually the components of what we have right now in the current state of the cloud development services.
Right. Yeah. But in general, as a cloud, like those are the parts that are important in cloud.
Yeah, right now that's the most important parts.
So let's start with the idea of a virtual machine. Let's explain that to people who may not know what a virtual machine is.
So a virtual machine is just a normal machine. Mm-hmm. But it's not on your desktop or on your premise. It's somewhere.
Okay.
So you're renting the time of using your machine for, a couple of hours, or it could be a month or something.
Right. Or a couple of minutes.
Couple of minutes, yeah. Of course. So it's no difference.
But
you can run any kind of operating system.
Yeah, but what's different about it is that it's not like... an actual, in a sense, it's not the same exact machine that's in a data center somewhere. You can actually scale it up and scale it down in terms of size.
Yeah, so the idea is that the actual hardware that is running this virtual machine on is a normal PC.
Right.
It's nothing really special. Mm-hmm. Most of the computers in the cloud are very powerful.
Right.
In order to put, you can run multiple virtual machines on one hardware. On one PC, for example.
Right. So, or you can run... Could you run a virtual machine on multiple PCs?
No.
Ah.
Yes. So that's the tricky point.
Okay.
Where that was... what I was going to say is that the current state of the cloud is still... You have to manage so many services by hand. I would like to see the future of cloud.
Yeah.
Like one big PC, for example. Think about a cloud operating system. That you can submit some data and say, okay, I'm going to use, let's say, 10,000 cores to do this job. And it's not about PC anymore. It's not about virtual machines anymore. It's about infrastructure that you can get and use it as long as you want for your job, for example. And everything is transparent. There is no boundaries. That's the cool thing about the cloud. I think in the future... We're gonna
so you can just say I need 10,000 cores. You're not even thinking about a computer.
That's the main idea.
Right, you're just thinking about it.
Yeah, but I told you we're still not there.
Right.
So you have to manage your PCs or virtual machines in the cloud in some way, and I think the current state of development in the cloud is still really low level.
Right.
It's so much potential there. The potential is so huge for the future.
Well, that's the problem. We start to do these things, and you're like thinking about what it actually becomes.
Yeah.
But it is that you know, we were joking. We were looking at that Onion video of the cloud. Like some people just don't really understand it, and they use the term cloud very liberally.
So, actually, I would like to point out some of the definitions of the cloud. Maybe it will be helpful for our listeners. So, actually, if you go to Wikipedia or somewhere for definition of the cloud is a practice of using a network of remote servers hosted on the internet to store, manage, and process data.
Right.
So, this is the, you know, general definition of cloud.
Right.
So, it's about, you know... It's somewhere, it's a remote service, right? Mm-hmm. So you access this service through the internet, public internet usually.
Right.
And then you can store, manage, and process data. So that's about the cloud. And if we go in a simpler definition, because we can come up with something a little bit simpler, I would say that it's a renting compute resources remotely. That's it.
Right.
You're renting for a amount of time some computer resources.
Right.
And everything above this is about the software, about the services that you can use.
Okay.
So different cloud providers, they have different services.
Right.
So you don't have to manage virtual machines, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the back-end systems that they're providing, and you just pay for the service.
But if you have a good cloud system, okay, where your VMs are really cool and the way that your data is managed and transferred is cool, you could technically make your own internal cloud.
Yes,
if you had a bunch of machines, like you had a render farm that's sitting around.
Yeah, even in our office, we have our internal private cloud.
Right.
With hundreds of machines that are running here, we are using open source software for managing those machines.
Right.
One of them is the OpenStack that we are using here.
Yeah.
So we can remotely just, if I need a couple of machines for my testing or for rendering, for example, I just go inside our OpenStack system using a nice web interface and say, okay, I need three machines with this number of cores, so with this number of memory resource, like 10 gigabytes or 16 gigabytes, wherever.
Right.
And the OpenStack will manage this for me, and then I have access to this machine somewhere here. Actually, I don't know on which exact hardware they will run, but they will run somewhere.
Someone's
in our premise. Right. Yeah. And then I can install V-Ray, for example. I can install some kind of different software that I want to use. And those virtual machines are, for me, they're just normal machines.
It's like a machine.
Just a normal machine, yeah.
So to make a virtual machine, you generally have to sort of create like an image of what that machine mm-hmm. is and what's going to be on it. And then you define the size of it. You'll say, I want, you know, 4 cores and 4 gigs of RAM and blah, blah, blah. And it creates an image of that on the computer, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So that image is kind of an important part of it, right? Because that image has to have all the stuff that you need on it, like V-Ray or whatever, right?
Yes. So usually you define, first of all, when you want to start a virtual machine, you have to define your operating system.
Right.
So this is the software, right? Then, or you can define this at the last step, but one of very important point is what kind of operating system you're going to run.
Mm-hmm.
So Linux or Windows, that's one of the most favorite, you know, popular operating system for the cloud.
Right.
I would like to see Austin someday, maybe.
Yeah.
It's still not virtualized. Actually, you can virtualize.
You can virtualize OS X?
Yeah, you can, but it's not that popular.
Okay.
I think there are some license restrictions from Apple, but I'm not sure about that.
Yeah. Okay.
So, of course, you can run FreeBSD, OpenBSD, so many operating systems, but, you know, most popular Linux or Windows.
Right.
Right. And then you have to define your hardware resources, like how many cores you want,
mm-hmm.
how much memory you want, and what's the size of the storage.
Right.
So these three parameters you have to define.
Okay.
And the cool thing about public cloud is that you can use exactly what you want to use, and you pay only for what you want. For example, you need only 4-core machines or let's say 7-core machine with exactly 5 gigabytes of RAM. This is something really strange, but it's, you know, it's cool because you pay only for what you use, what you need.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually going to get into the cost at a different point because that's a big discussion point and there's different ways of thinking about cost. Mm-hmm. So we'll get to that in a second. But yes, you can be very, very specific about the definition of what you want.
Flexible.
And flexibility of it. So now you have that virtual machine. You have to sort of put the things that you have or want on there. That's part of the management of this, of the cloud, right? The job.
Yes, management. And here comes the tricky point.
Okay.
Because you have to have some knowledge here.
Yeah.
Of course, there are some services that are coming from different cloud providers that will do this job for you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that most of the people that are familiar with just a little bit of Linux or Windows administration or just installing software, they will be able to do that by themselves.
Okay.
So after running a virtual machine with a specific number of cores and memory, of course, then you can log into this machine. If it's a Windows, you have a remote desktop connection to this machine, mm-hmm. and it's pretty fast, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same like working on your desktop, but it's actually somebody else's desktop.
Somewhere
else. It's somewhere, right? And I would,
it's almost arbitrary where it is.
Yeah,
it
I would say that if you're living in Europe, most of the cloud providers, it's very, very important to choose the specific zone of where you're living or what's your location right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually local internet is way faster than using continental internet. For example, mm-hmm. If I am in Sofia right now, I would create a virtual machine somewhere in Europe
because mm-hmm.
we have a very fast connection, internet connection to Europe. And if I need a virtual machine in USA, then I'll create only when I need it, right?
Right, right, right.
Because the connection, it will be a little bit slower. And also latency is very important.
Mm-hmm.
We got to fight the speed of light, you know.
Yeah.
To LA, we have like, I think it's about 100 milliseconds latency or something.
I was like talking about it with, it was either, yes, it was Blago yesterday. He was saying when we were looking at the, it's like just the definition, you know, the speed of light. If we had a fiber optic cable, you know, one fiber optic cable between Sofia and our LA office, it'd still be 100 millisecond latency.
No, it's actually about 300. I think it's 33 milliseconds.
Right.
But the actual, this is the maximum speed that you can get. But the thing is that we never get this kind of speed because, the usual speed is about 100, 150, 200 milliseconds.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's interesting.
So, yeah, that's really big problem.
It is.
The speed of light is, you know, too low.
It's too slow.
It's too slow.
Okay. Well, I like the idea that we have to fight the speed of light for certain situations. But it does bring up some really interesting points. We could look into that. Now, this comes up to a couple of other cases. So how long does it take to boot a machine in a sense? It's virtual.
Depends pretty much on the provider. So on-premise is really fast. It depends on your actual hardware that you're going to run the virtual machine.
Mm-hmm.
But in the public clouds, I can speak about the big three,
mm-hmm.
right? It's Amazon, of course, Google Cloud Platform, GCP,
mm-hm,
and also Microsoft Azure.
Mm-hmm.
So it pretty much depends also of the type of the hardware. So if you in Azure, you're going to boot Windows, for example, in between 3 to 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to boot Linux in Google Cloud, it can take less than a minute.
Hmm.
In Amazon, depends on the operating system also. But it's, let's say, a couple of minutes.
Hmm. Okay. So it doesn't take too long to start.
No. Yeah. And this time is not counting. I mean, booting the machine is not part of the payment process. I think so, yeah.
Okay. So then let's look at the next portion is the data, right?
Yes.
So you have to, because you were talking about the latency and stuff like that, you actually want as much of the data that you're processing and creating to be as close to the machines as possible.
Yes.
So you want to save the data, like if you're going to use, you know, Google Cloud or Amazon Cloud, you want that data to be on Google or Amazon, right?
That's another tricky point.
Right.
You have to find your way to put your data only once in the cloud.
Right.
Because when your data is in the cloud, it is extremely fast to distribute this data to different virtual machines or different render nodes, for example,
right,
if we're talking about V-Ray. So in V-Ray case, we have to move all our data to every different render node.
Right.
And there are many ways for doing this. One way, which is simple, it doesn't matter if it's a Windows host operating system or Linux, both operating system, they provide a network share. So you can have one virtual machine, for example. That's a very, very simple way. And put your data there,
mm-hmm,
and just share this network folder or drive with the other render nodes, and they can fetch the data automatically.
Okay.
And it's really fast. It's really okay because most of cloud providers, they're providing 10 gigabits of network.
Right.
Between different render nodes, which means high-speed network. The network is even faster than your local drive.
Right.
And you don't have to take care about copying data. It's just there, right? So you can mount the network drive to the render node and just use it, consume the data, right?
Right.
Of course, there are other ways. I think Microsoft Azure, they did very recently a service which is called File Storage Service. So you can mount a network drive to your local premise in your workstation.
Okay.
So if you're running Windows on your desktop, for example, you can see a remote network drive on your, let's say, machine.
Yeah.
So you just drag and drop files from your machine.
Right.
And they will be in the cloud.
Okay.
And it's fast, by the way. It's not that bad at all.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, like but it's
10,
it's
20, 30, 40 megabytes per second.
If you have a high speed internet on your at your
yes.
home. Right. So yes. So the speed of your local network is it
that's the limit.
That's the limit.
Yes.
Which means that you need to in order to be really good work well with the cloud or efficient, the first thing you do is make sure that your internet speed is pretty good.
Absolutely. Yes. So I would say for professionals, small studios or you know, or even big studios, it's kind of easy for them to buy very decent internet right now.
Yeah.
At the moment, especially in Europe, in USA, I think that's not that big problem.
Right.
And the speed of the internet is going to be, you know, better and better in the future.
Well, I was talking to Kevin Bailey, and he was saying, you know, for Atomic Fiction, what they were doing is they basically had 1 gigabit.
Yeah, exactly.
For and then one that was their entire internet speed was 1 gigabit, and it was fine. It was good.
And Amazon and Microsoft and Google, they're providing this service that they called like direct internet connection. So you can actually plug your cable directly to their infrastructure.
Oh, really?
From the office, yeah.
That's gotta be expensive, money. Though.
No, I don't think it's that expensive. It's usually the price that you pay is from your local. Network provider.
Yes,
and they have partners in your local zone. You could be in London, you could be in Barcelona. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So they're partnering with a lot of internet providers locally, so you can get like fiber optics direct to the cloud.
Right.
And you can actually what you can do is to create a secure tunnel.
Right.
From your premise, from your local network to the virtual machines that are running in the cloud.
Okay.
So you can treat them like machines.
That are in your office.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the speed is really high.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is very useful. I'm sure when it gets down to the security questions, those are going to be big. But we're not going to get there yet because we have a couple more things we're going to talk about. Let's talk about some use cases, okay? Because I think this is what was kind of fun about it. Obviously, people saying, okay, now I've got, let's say I have a bunch of cloud machines, so I've defined a render farm on one of these services, either, you know, Amazon or Google or Azure as the big three examples, but I'm sure there's other ones as well. So you've defined that, and now you can make this a render farm of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
So there
you
are
have to manage the jobs.
You have to manage the jobs. So there are solutions that people can look at to manage the jobs, including our own that we're coming up with, right?
Yeah.
Which is V-Ray Cloud. Now, that is if you want to just treat it as a render farm, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's other things you can do beyond just a render farm managing frames of actual doing stuff. You can actually do much smaller little jobs like rendering stills with DR or anything like that.
Yeah. So I would say I'll go back a little bit.
Okay.
And try to explain something. So, you know, cloud is about scalability. That's very important.
Yes.
And you have to be really smart.
Yep.
On spending money in the cloud because we have really bad, not actually we, but some of our clients, they had really bad experience with the cloud, spending a lot of money because they just forgot to kill some of the virtual machines that they don't need. And then you have to pay them, right? And
right.
It's kind of expensive still.
Yeah.
The prices are going down all the time, but it's still kind of expensive. It's not like running a machine full day, 24/7.
No,
you don't do that.
Right.
You do this only for machines that you want. So for rendering jobs, at the moment you you're done with the job, you better kill the machine because you don't need it.
Right.
So when you have the infrastructure as a service, then you have to put the right software. Mm-hmm. If you're a hacker or you know what to do with the infrastructure and you can manage your software, then you can do a couple of scripts based on Linux Bash or Windows PowerScript. It doesn't matter what kind of operating system, just to manage the processes that are going to run on these virtual machines and the tasks that you want. Mm-hmm. For example, you can have a snapshot image of a machine with a V-Ray server running. Mm-hmm. It's, for example, V-Ray is already installed. It's running in server mode. Mm-hmm. And it's just waiting for a DR request from another machine.
Right.
And then you can clone this machine like 10 times, right? With 32 cores, for example.
Right.
Then run one machine and just connect this machine to those 10 machines.
Right.
And the cool thing here is that you can, in different cloud providers, you can be really smart because those DR servers, they can be, in Amazon, we have this thing, what was the name? Snap. Okay, I'll come up in a while.
Okay.
But in Google Cloud, you have preemptive machines. So you pay like 1 cent per core.
Right. That's really low.
Which is really,
really good.
1 cent
per core per hour, right?
Yeah. But the thing is that your machine can be killed at any time by the cloud provider.
Right.
But you're not going to lose anything because these are just DR machines without storage, without anything. Mm-hmm. And the actual rendering job is running on a real machine, right?
Right.
A real virtual machine, and it will just continue
so
to render.
So you have basically one machine that's actually doing the rendering.
This is the server, right?
This is the server. And then
the client with whatever.
Whatever it is. Yeah. And then you have five or six or 10 or 20 machines, and those are all doing the different buckets.
Yes.
And you showed me one where you had 2,000 buckets going on a render for one example that you were trying.
Yeah, we run to close to 3,000, 2,500, 2,800, something like this, yeah.
It's really kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And if you look at the whole thing, like this is a very big image, right?
Yeah.
And so let's say it's an 8,000, was an 8,000?
8K by 8K.
8K by 8K.
Whatever.
So it's huge image. And you, it was done in like a few minutes.
Yeah, because, you know, in production rendering or bucket rendering that we have in V-Ray, we scale really, really well. It's
right.
Like if you do the job in 1 hour with one machine and you have, let's say, one job, 10 hours, right?
Right.
One frame. And then if you run 10 machines in DR mode, you're going to have like done the job in 1 hour.
Yeah.
Almost like this.
Right.
So we scale really well in production rendering.
Right.
And the cool thing here is that the money that you're going to spend for the cloud job, it will be the same.
Right. Whether you run one machine or 10 machines and do it
exactly.
In a tenth of the time.
Exactly.
So you get the same amount of money because you're spending the same amount of time per core.
Absolutely.
And then, but then you save the whole bunch of time.
Yes. It's about the time. And right. here's the scalability.
Right.
So you pay the same amount of money. It doesn't matter if it's one machine running 1,000 hours.
Right.
Or
well, the example we said before is like waiting 1,000 minutes to do something on one core costs you the same than doing it for 1 minute on 1,000 cores.
Yes, exactly.
So remember that get as many machines as you need, not more than you need, but as many.
And you have to manage them very smart.
Yeah, because if you're going to get 1,000 machines, then make sure you kill those machines when you're done.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's the scalability of this. So
here comes also the price of the memory. So you have to be, you got to do your calculations well before starting 1,000 machines.
So who can do, is that something that the job manager does the calculations for you?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there are a lot of different job management software in... You can use or buy. I don't know if they're providing the on-demand paying because most of the software in the world right now, you have to pay license per machine or something like this.
Right.
So for V-Ray in the cloud, we're going to provide the, you know, elastic licensing or pay as you use or pay as you go. There are so many terms for this kind of software payment. So you just, at the end of the day, you pay for, you know, core per hour or something like this.
Right. Yeah. So there's different ways to look at the payment on VM machines, right? So you could look at it as a, you pay as you're, pay as you go. So like you pay, it's like a taxi cab every time you go in.
Exactly.
You pay money
it's
and you
a
leave.
Meter.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
As opposed to leasing a car for as much, you know, for a month or whatever. Because that's the other way you're doing it, is reserving the hardware and you just sits there. And it's like,
I think in Amazon and Microsoft, you can reserve your hardware. So you pay some amount of money up front.
Right.
And say, okay, I'm going to use for the next month or next year,
right,
even, let's say, 10 machines with this kind of hardware. Mm-hmm. And if you do this kind of payment upfront, then you're going to get a really big discount on pay per minute or pay per hour usage.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's almost like leasing machines.
Kind of, yes. But another cool thing about the cloud is you don't care about the hardware.
Right.
So if something fails, you don't have to repair it. Somebody will do this job for you.
Yeah, you don't have to pay for air conditioning.
Yeah, for example,
you don't have to pay for power.
Yeah, exactly, for everything.
Right.
And another interesting example is that if you run your virtual machine on your premise, for example, you have your own hardware in the office, then you have to, if this hardware fails, somebody has to provision the virtual machine to another machine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a kind of tricky, job.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the clouds are providing some kind of automatic redundancy of your running operating system or software. So if the CPU goes down or something goes down, they can move your virtual machine to another hardware.
Right,
like 5 seconds ago or 10 seconds ago, that will.
So
be,
it's still your action is still alive.
Yeah, it's still runnable. Yeah, so there will be some kind of downtime, like 2 seconds, 4 seconds,
yeah.
5 seconds.
Excuse me, while we move this job that's still going to another virtual machine.
For example, also about storage. So most of the cloud providers, they're providing redundant storage, so you don't have to care about that much about your about your data, because it's very, very secured.
Right.
That's another cool thing that you pay, but otherwise on premise you have to buy at least 3 more hard drives.
Right.
Buy very expensive write controllers for managing all this thing, and at the end you have to also backup this data somewhere outside of your office. Right.
Right. Yeah. This is all just.
It's just there. It's a service.
It's a service.
You got it.
Yeah.
It's out of the box.
It's basically
in the cloud.
Like you are renting the highest quality network infrastructure you can get.
Exactly. Absolutely.
And you're paying for it, but that you pay for it. Now there's two ways to pay
for
it.
Yeah, but the prices are good for storage right now. It depends on your.
That's another part. So you have to pay for storage, your data staying there, right?
Yeah.
So let's say you need a terabyte of data on the cloud somewhere. What's that going to cost you?
Terabyte. Actually, the prices are based on gigabytes, so we can do the calculation, but it's about 2 cents per gigabyte.
Okay. And that's for high-speed storage, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a high-speed storage.
So that's another thing to realize. It's like you pay for different levels of storage. So if you have storage that is you just want to back stuff up on, you can use very slow storage.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly.
Just data. So
Amazon is providing this kind of storage. Microsoft also and Google also.
It's called Glacier.
Glacier is an Amazon, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And so, but then the higher speed storage, I guess, is S3. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
And that
exactly.
And that S3 storage is much, much faster, but you pay more for that. Right.
Yes.
Okay, but people should realize, like, storage is, but all of these providers, Amazon, Google, etc., they have a huge amount of data that can put up there,
yes.
Amazon especially. I mean, just to people may not realize that they use the cloud every day, and here's how they're using it. And they use Amazon Cloud every day.
Mm-hmm.
Netflix is Netflix is stored on Amazon Cloud.
Yeah.
And it basically
entire
on the entire infrastructure is on the Amazon Cloud.
Yes.
Ironically, their biggest competitor is Amazon Prime, which is also on the Amazon Cloud.
But it's okay in our.
And this is a system that allows you to watch, you know, now 4K films streaming to your house.
Yeah, it's coming. So the future is now.
Yeah. So those types of things are people should, you know, understand that is basically what's going on. Okay. Well, that's pretty.
Actually, I was just checking the prices.
Yeah.
For example, in Google Cloud, you can have a nearline storage, which is 110 per gigabyte. So a terabyte will come to something like, is it $10? Yeah. Something like this.
For how long?
Per month.
Per month? Whoa. Yes. $10 a month for a terabyte?
Yes.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is the slowest storage, but it's a redundant storage, so everything is okay.
Okay.
So for backup, this is I'm not going to use this storage if I want to submit a job to render in the cloud. Definitely.
Right, because it's too slow.
Yeah. But for caching, because the other very important thing is that you move your data for a while, and the cool thing here is that you don't pay for moving the data to the cloud. The ingress, most of the cloud providers, you don't pay for networking there.
Oh, okay.
That's another story. So networking, you have to pay for networking only for ingress, which means when you download data. For putting data in the cloud, you don't pay for network.
Okay.
Okay, that's another thing that is very important listeners to know, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. So you pay for getting your data back.
Yes.
So you want to keep your data on the cloud for as long as possible and not just keep going back and forth.
Yeah.
Right. So I remember actually specifically like when Kevin was talking about it on the walk, they had all their frames were staying on the cloud the whole time. They didn't.
It's so one big cache, right?
So the compositors were working on the cloud storage the whole time because they didn't want to bring their frames back and forth.
Oh, yeah, exactly. If you can afford this, this is the best solution because once most of the data is there and when you have changes on your workstation or premise, only the delta or the changes will be applied to the cloud data.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really small amount of data that you have to move back to the cloud in order to render.
Right.
And usually the biggest amount of data that you have to put to V-Ray is the input data.
Mm-hmm.
Output data sometimes could be small, especially for preview. So you can have your frames in JPEGs mm-hmm. the first time you render. And the next time you can get your EXRs.
Yeah. Right.
And they will be full HD. It could go to about 40 megabytes per frame.
Right.
So it's not that big, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is cool. You can do a traditional render farm. You can do a DR render farm. We even did crazy things where we, in a sense, with the stuff we did with Kevin using NVIDIA's cluster using a lot of GPU power. That's another thing to consider is all the GPU, like making a GPU farm or a GPU cloud. We were able to create a massive DR system.
That was an interesting story when we started to render the construct.
Yeah.
And NVIDIA said, okay, we got this awesome cluster, they want to use it for this kind of job. And we said, oh yeah, of course, but we have to manage the data, we have to manage. And we got our V-Ray Cloud, which is a integration technology.
Right. it's a management part of it, right?
Yeah, but inside the V-Ray Cloud, we didn't have any job management because we didn't wanted to have this kind of a software.
Right.
But the V-Ray Cloud everything is about the API and the backend.
Right.
So you can manage a lot of things inside the V-Ray Cloud. And we sit down and think about it and say, okay, let's do a hackathon.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do a 5 to 7 days super fast hackathon. Use V-Ray Cloud as a client.
Right.
And create a software above the V-Ray Cloud to manage the jobs in a very smart way.
Right.
And create a job manager, right?
Yeah. So you guys created a job manager in a few days.
Yeah. It was like, yeah, it was about really, really, I think it was about 7 days.
Yeah.
And then another 5 to 7 days fixing some bugs, you right. know?
Yeah.
Because you always have bugs, right?
Yeah, but basically Kevin was able to go in. He's like, all right, he outputted a VR scene file. Mm-hmm. Out of whatever he was doing.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he just dumped it onto
he just dumped it on.
Yeah. And you made a little bundle package that comes in and dumped it on and then just hit go. And then all of a sudden you even created an interface where you saw the frames completing as they're going.
Exactly.
So
he can see in real time what's rendering for every single job. And also we did a very simple web-based player for... based on the job that is running right now, so you can almost in real time see the output.
Yeah, it was like a flipbook. Yeah, it was a little flipbook.
Exactly.
But in a browser. The whole thing ran into a browser, which is great. Yeah. It's really nice to be able to just do things on a browser because that means you can manage it and see it from anywhere. You
can do everything nowadays with a browser. It's like, you know, browser is the operating system.
Yeah, yeah, because basically it's just a window back into the cloud, right? Yeah.
It's a renderer, by the way. I don't know why they call it browser. It's a renderer.
It is.
It's a visualization tool of HTML, JavaScript, and cascading style sheet.
Yeah, that's true.
And we're doing the same thing with V-Ray.
Right.
The only difference is that the input of the browser is this HTML file, and the input of V-Ray is the VR scene file.
Yep. Yep. It takes a little longer to run the V-Ray side file than to pull up a Google page.
Yeah, absolutely. And you need a lot more hardware and resources.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was pretty cool. all right. Let's see. But the other thing we did is we even used it to do the crazy thing we did where we actually do it inside a motion builder. So you even were able to turn it into a supercomputer in a sense.
Oh, yeah, that was another story. Very interesting. Actually, I think I talked with you just a year ago.
Yeah, it was a year ago we did this.
Wow, can we do some kind of a really awesome... close to real-time rendering because mm-hmm. we have this awesome power with a NVIDIA GPU.
Well, here
right?
was our problem, right? Here was our problem because we knew it was smart. This was the thing. It's like we said, okay, we can run a motion builder on this machine mm-hmm. and this machine we can put 4 GPUs in it. That's the biggest size at the time that a workstation could have, right? So it's like, okay, great. And then he says, but we need more GPUs. We want
to
see.
We want to be faster.
We want to be faster. Of course we want to be faster. So we said, but we have this VCA. The problem with the VCA is that it's Linux. And yes, there is a version of Motion Builder that's Linux, but really the VCA is its own little thing and you don't want to mess with it and re-image it.
It's a computer in the cloud.
And so it's like, it's just like, we can't do that. So it was like, how are we going to connect to it? It's like, okay, so we have a network connection here. All right, so we can do it in LA where we connect to that box. What if we could connect to a whole lot more VCAs? And that was a thing. It's like figuring out how to basically have V-Ray, a DR version of V-Ray for progressive, because you can basically do progressive DR.
Progressive rendering, yeah.
And have a lot of machines going. And that's what you did.
Actually, we did it in this way. One of the problems that we have to solve was that our initial out-of-the-box DR mode of V-Ray is heavy-duty on a network. I mean, it's transferring a lot of data.
Right.
So the smart thing that we did, because... Inside Motion Builder, we have the app SDK running, V-Ray app SDK. Mm-hmm. Inside the cloud, we have the V-Ray app SDK again.
Right.
So what we did is just to move the data from Motion Builder with the app SDK to the cloud. It is the same rendering. Mm-hmm. And then when you have some kind of motion or some kind of moving, we sent using the public internet only the delta. Mm-hmm. It's a very small amount of data that we have to move to a slow network. Mm-hmm. And the actual DR with all the, let's say, 16 VCA servers in NVIDIA cluster.
I think we used 4 because that's all we could use at the time. Yeah, that's all they had a budget for.
Last tests were with 4, but I did some tests with 10.
Okay.
And from Bulgaria, for example, with a you know, low latency and it was amazing. We got like 30, 40 frames per second half HD rendering.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean,
yeah. I mean, that means you're getting a clean render.
So the real DR data that is going between the render nodes was using Infinite Band inside the cluster.
Right.
And only final image was transmitted in a very high compressed JPEG or back to the client browser.
So, but within, you know, a 24th of a second, let's say it's 24 yes. frames a second, you have to get the delta change that are happening, right? Which, like you said, is very small, or the goal is that it's very small. Get the delta change, make sure that all the machines see that. Yeah. They each render their portion of the image. Then you've got to recomposite that into a single image
and
save it as a JPEG. And that has to happen in how long?
A couple of milliseconds.
Yes. So how do you, I mean, even just saving a JPEG, how do you do that? How do you save a JPEG in just like a couple of milliseconds?
Yeah, it takes about 1 millisecond to compress the JPEG.
Wow.
It's really, I mean, Stanley downstairs, he did this Turbo JPEG, which is, I think most of the code is in assembler.
Uh-huh.
And it's, I mean, computers nowadays are really, really fast.
Yes.
The only problem is that the software is crappy. I mean, it's so fast.
Yeah.
If you did your software in the right way, the speed is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't blame the computer for being slow.
No. Actually, the slowest part of the computer right now is the hard drive, and it's with SSD drives, it's just not that big problem anymore.
Right.
And the other problem is the memory.
Right.
So if I have like, you know, 5 or 10 gigabytes of L1 or L0 cache inside the CPU, oh my God.
Yeah.
I can do so many things. I mean, V-Ray will be like 100, maybe 1,000 times faster.
Right. But you have to get to that memory fast.
Yes.
Yeah.
And again, with the CPU calculation, everything is about caches.
Yeah.
If you cache, if you structure your data in the right way, you're going to get more compute power.
Yeah.
Or compute, how to say, yeah.
We did a podcast with Blago, which we're going to...
GPUs are the same.
I know, but he has this whole thing about the limitations of each one of those different types of hardwares.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, it's really, really cool. Okay. All right, so now, let me see. Let me go back to our notes here. We have established what the cloud machines are, how the data is there, what the job manager is, where, how much it costs, how you pay for it, what types of jobs you can do on it. Now, here's going to be the question that everyone says. Everyone's going to ask. Because the minute I go, it's like, you know, you can do this really fast if you did it on the cloud. It's like, nope, we're not doing it on the cloud. Why are they saying that? Because they are concerned of security, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about security on the cloud. I know we think that the data is very secure, but let's define what are the... There's two parts of cloud that are that you and I talked about security. One is moving the data back and forth.
Yep.
That's one of the security points. And the other one is the storage of the data itself on those machines.
On the cloud. In the cloud, yeah.
So those two parts, tell me about how they're different.
Yeah, they're different in many ways because you have to put your or move your data using public internet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's not that big problem because you have multiple solutions for doing this job. One of these, just open a VPN connection directly to your virtual private cloud in the cloud.
Okay.
Right? And it's completely secure. I mean, it's the same way that you're doing your banking, actually.
Right.
That's perfectly okay. You don't have to think about it. It's just working. It's there.
So it's encrypted data.
Encrypted data, yeah.
Right.
And it's really, really, really hard to be, you know, hacked or cracked or whatever.
Right.
So once the data is there, then you have to be concerned about two other things. One thing is that if your machines are open to the internet, then somebody can crack them, for example, or hack them mm-hmm. remotely. So you just don't open them to the internet. That's, yeah, of course, that's really important.
Right.
So you can have multiple machines in a virtual private network inside the public cloud.
Right.
They will have local IP addresses, and everything will be closed. Only one single point of failure is the best good for networking and security. Right. So you can log in inside, and that's it.
Well, that's okay. That's funny. All right.
Yeah.
So let's say I'm working at a studio and I'm doing some stuff, and they're mm-hmm. like, "Well, they're really secure about stuff. We are not allowed internet access in our office network." Okay. But then they have one machine that obviously have to have at least open, one machine.
Right. Which that makes the connection, right?
So they can make at least email other people.
Yeah.
So they have one connection.
That's the gateway.
Yeah. And you VPN into the cloud, and then the cloud machines are the same situation. Yeah, they don't have internet access either.
Yes. which is okay, because you have this tunnel. This is the VPN network between your gateway and a single machine somewhere in the cloud.
Right.
And this tunnel is secured, and you're totally okay with this. I mean, that's how internet is working right nowadays.
But why do you think people have this fear of it? It's going on some of the machine, I'm freaking out.
You know what? Like 150 years ago, when there were no banks, all the people in the world, they were storing their money at home, right?
Right.
Like what we're doing right now, we're storing our pictures, so we're storing our data in our offices.
Right.
And nobody trusts about the cloud. Right now, nobody's putting money in at home, right? Because everybody's trusting the banks, right?
Right.
So think about the cloud as our future banks of data.
Right.
It's a little bit scary to say it in this way.
Right.
But it's going to happen. Right. And it will be more secure. It will be more.
No one. When someone robs a bank, your money's not gone.
Yeah, because they're of course. Is this? It will be the same like with your data.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just throw away all my backup hard drives because I just want like maybe 1 year ago. I just decided to put all my pictures in the cloud, and that's it.
Right.
All my family pictures, all my movies, and everything. And I'm free now. It's over there. It's secured. It's but encrypted also.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
Okay, but
it's personal data. Yeah,
it's personal data. Yeah, but you picked. And here's another thing. Okay, let's just if we want to go down that road, you picked a cloud service, right?
Mm-hmm.
You probably picked one that you felt was secure enough, but also cheap enough. You're not going to pay
yes,
an arm or leg.
Of course.
How do you know how long that cloud system is going to be up?
You never know. Yeah, how do you know your bank is going to be alive like 1 year ago and you have $1 million in it?
Yeah,
you don't know.
Right, yeah. That's true.
It's true.
Yeah.
You just hope that it will be fine for you.
Yes. And then I guess
it's really very rare to big, let's say, cloud providers like Microsoft or Google or Amazon to go down, right?
True. Yeah, if you go on the internet and you type in Google and you get a 404 or...
that will be...
Go look outside for the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah,
it's not not that good. All right, well, this is really cool, but...
Also, yeah, I just wanted to say something about data stored in the cloud.
Yes.
Most of the cloud providers, again, they're providing encryption.
Oh, for the data itself?
Yes.
Okay.
So the data is there, but they can't really read it.
Right.
So I don't think that...
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a mindset, you know?
It is.
Just a mindset.
Yeah. And it's going to take a little bit of time, but it's funny because I'm seeing people who said it's never going to happen to... They're not even thinking about the possibility. It's like, it's not going to happen. Not going to happen. It's like...
No.
Yeah. I tell you what, they're going to start losing their competitive edge if they don't start doing
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because they can't scale.
They can't scale.
And it will be the price in the cloud will go down and down and down.
Right.
running so many big data centers is more efficient than running 10 or 20 servers. You have to pay them, right?
Right. And yeah. And the fact is, you go to small places like, or medium sized places like Atomic Fiction, which is actually getting bigger because they're becoming more efficient.
More and more efficient.
More and more efficient. They can get a render farm. Technically speaking, their render farm can be as big as the biggest render farm in the world, or bigger.
Absolutely.
And that's what they're doing, and yeah, that they're like this. Yeah, and it's part of their cost, and then that's how it works. And the cost, as you said, is going down, right?
I think it's a public information, but I think the last month for rendering the walk, they managed to render like 2 million core hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just the Spark mode, right?
Yeah.
Which is awesome. I mean, you can't do this if you have like 10, 20, even 100 servers.
Yeah.
It's just impossible.
Well, when I was at DD, we had a lot of machines. We may have had up to 1,000. I don't know. But that's freaking expensive.
That's so, yeah, exactly.
You know? And on top of that, we didn't have enough power in our location. So we had to rent rack space. These were our machines, but we rented rack space in Las Vegas.
Oh my God.
And so we had to have, you know, a whole a spare system to Vegas to make sure everything
was
good.
Which is another money.
Yeah, I don't have to worry about any of that stuff.
Yeah.
In fact, you can just be way more efficient about things because you don't have to worry about having a huge IT team.
Absolutely.
None of that stuff.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's go to the next step that I want to talk about. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about V-Ray Cloud. Tell people specifically what V-Ray Cloud is.
That's a nice question, actually.
Because now that we've established what cloud is, what V-Ray Cloud is the thing that I want to make sure people understand.
V-Ray Cloud, if I have to put a one sentence, it's a middleware and backend infrastructure for creating new and modern visualization solutions, let's say.
Okay.
I don't know how I came up with this.
It's very fancy.
Yeah, is it? Okay. So it's an open communication system that you can run on-premise. You can buy it, of course. You can run on-premise.
Yeah.
And create some kind of a cutting-edge visualization platform or system for your users.
Okay.
We have interactive rendering in real time. You can not, it's not a real time, of course, because it's rendering, but it's interactive. So you can change almost everything that you have in the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do cooperation around the world with the one and the same scene. So you can have rendering running in the server, but different users from, let's say, different points in the world, they can see the same thing. Then you can chat with them.
Mm-hmm.
You can get feedback and say, okay, I want this material, like this color or this texture.
Right.
Move this car here, or move this window here, or move this chair here, or mm-hmm. rotate this thing. And everything is based on open web standards. It's a web browser based, so you can also use it from iPhone or iPad or wherever.
Right. But it basically it's an interface that you interact with that manages
yes.
stuff that's going on the cloud, yes. right?
With our partners, they're doing their own interface.
Mm-hmm.
And we're providing the backend infrastructure.
Okay.
So the data storage, the rendering process, manage. So in V-Ray Cloud, let's put it in this way. In V-Ray Cloud, if you start a job
mm-hmm.
and you want to do a DR, it's mm-hmm. a one click. It's a one call to the backend infrastructure and say, okay, I need 10 more machines.
Right.
V-Ray Cloud will take care about everything. It will move the data in the best possible, the fastest possible way to
right.
all the render nodes. It will launch the necessary process. It will load the data inside the process. And everything will be done for you.
Right.
Automatically.
But you can write your own interface for it.
You exactly.
And that interface would, in a browser or
yes,
whatever.
Yes,
right?
You can put your own, let's say, web server in front of the V-Ray Cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So V-Ray Cloud is just a backend, right?
Okay.
and you can do
and it
your
takes care of all
UI.
The management of exactly. the rendering.
Exactly.
Okay, and so you could technically make your own render manager, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to, if you had your own proprietary render manager.
That's exactly what we did with the Construct project.
Right, exactly. So with Construct, we made our own render manager for, yeah. for to do this.
It was a simple one.
Yeah,
but it
enough
was
for us to understand.
Enough.
Like, yeah, it was us like, hey, you know, Kevin needs some kind of a render manager.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just make one real quick. And so, and so you guys made it, but you build it and it just used the V-Ray cloud to actually do the
exactly that's the beauty of you know, putting years of work and in a software development or product development, and then at the end you say, okay, I need this, all right, you're gonna have it in 5 days, right?
Right.
So for example,
that's the whole, if I'm gonna say anything, like, you're also responsible for App SDK, right?
Yeah.
So App SDK and V-Ray cloud is, we're gonna make everything that was difficult about integrating V-Ray and the simplest way possible.
That's the whole goal, yeah.
Yeah.
The idea is to have, actually, when we started App SDK, we initially call it, that's interesting, we call it Web, V-Ray Web SDK.
Web?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Web, yeah. Because we didn't know exactly what, we just wanted to open V-Ray to the web.
Okay.
And that's why we was thinking about, okay, let's do it in somehow, and we started with Java, by the way, those days, like, it was like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And at the beginning, this project was called Web, V-Ray Web SDK,
mm-hmm.
Because we had to find a way to open this big monolithic, you know, binary code of V-Ray.
Yeah.
Because V-Ray is really big, by the way. It's about, I don't know, it's 200 megabytes of binary data.
Okay.
Yeah. So we have to open to web to be accessible through, let's say, web browser.
Right.
So it's kind of tricky.
Yeah.
And what we did, we just step back a little bit and say, okay, let's do it in the right way. Let's create an SDK, which we'll use with different languages, programming languages. So right now we have the App SDK in, of course, C and C++. Also, we have it for Java.NET.
Yeah.
And we have it for Node.js, which is JavaScript. We have it for Python.
Yep.
We have some Java. Yeah, I said Java. Okay. So we got like 5 or 6 different languages.
Yep.
That everybody in the world can use to program against V-Ray. And
yes.
Use V-Ray in their own applications.
Yes.
So that was the initial idea.
Of App SDK,
over,
yeah.
Yeah. And then using this SDK, then we decided to come up with a platform and system for the web,
right,
which we called V-Ray Cloud.
Right. Well, that makes sense. So you basically, you abstracted V-Ray with App SDK, and then you abstracted the web with V-Ray Cloud.
Exactly. Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Which is great because when people say, it's like, okay, no, V-Ray Cloud is not our own cloud system, or it could be if you wanted it to be, mm-hmm, when we get there, but it's a way for you to make your cloud system and you just connect to it.
Absolutely.
Really easily.
Yeah.
Really easily. And we've got several really interesting examples of people who have done some great stuff with. Can you talk about any of them? Or some of the interesting?
I don't.
You don't think so?
Yeah.
But there
I would say maybe one good example is the guys from Exocortex, Clara.io.
Clara.io, that's right.
Yeah. That's an interesting project. And
Clara.io is basically a web-based 3D platform.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's basically like a Maya or something, but it's their own thing. It's called Clara.io.
Yes.
And V-Ray is integrated into it.
Yes.
And so you can render to V-Ray using V-Ray Cloud, basically.
Yeah.
So you rent a machine, I think, on Clara.io.
But it's on their cloud infrastructure, so you don't care. I think that you pay for, it's based on subscription or some kind of a limited amount of resources, and you pay more if you want to render more, something like this. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, one quick, just going back a little bit, back to cost, because this is important. How do people pay for licensing of software through the cloud? Because obviously, we're not giving away V-Ray for free on this, right?
Yeah, it's still not free.
Yeah. Right.
So, yeah, there are two ways. One way is because, as I told you, most of the people think that V-Ray Cloud is a service.
Right.
But I would say it's a software
okay.
that you can buy and install on-premise or you can put it on your cloud somewhere, mm-hmm. right? So the one way is to license this is per server node, mm-hmm. and there is a specific price for a server node per year. Mm-hmm. And the other way is to go in a pay-as-you-go mode that we are testing right now. Mm-hmm. So every single core hour can be tracked, right? Mm-hmm. And then we have a pricing for a core hour.
Right.
The cool thing here is that we are tracking every single second. So if your job or rendering job is taking on just 61 seconds, mm-hmm. you're going to be charged only for 61 seconds.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty good. That's mm-hmm. pretty good.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. But so what about the some of the other things are like, how does, let's say there's someone else is using another system, just so people understand, like technically if you're going to use not a V-Ray cloud infrastructure but actual V-Ray on some cloud, if they're going to pay for V-Ray licenses of actual rendering, that's a different cost, right?
What do you mean? Let's say
someone makes a
solution based on V-Ray cloud and running somewhere in the cloud.
Right, and then they want to basically have a bunch of people say, hey, you know, I've got a render farm on the cloud for you or whatever, or someone else do it. They pay for every time V-Ray is used, right?
Yeah, the end user is not paying for the licensing. That's right. Why the V-Ray cloud is a little bit more expensive, because it gives you this right.
Right.
To provide service, rendering service to third parties.
Right, okay.
When you buy V-Ray cloud, it's a little bit more expensive. That's normal, sure. because the licensing is different.
Right.
So you can share your license at the moment you're rendering that you bought from us
right.
to your users, to your clients.
Right, right.
So
okay.
the license agreement and everything is a little bit different from the ordinary V-Ray that you buy for 3D Studio Max.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Or Maya.
All right. Well, if people who listen to this start to get interested in cloud stuff, how do they get in touch with us? Is there somewhere to just email you, or is there like an email or a site to go to?
Yeah, it just vraycloud@chaosgroup.com or okay. email me or some of our guys in the you know.
Well, vraycloud@chaosgroup.com, I'm sure you will get to that one.
Yeah.
It'll go to your inbox, I'm sure.
Awesome.
All right. Well, this is perfect, Royce. We're right about an hour, and we've got lots of information. So this will be really good.
Yep.
All right. Thanks so much, Royce.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure. Thank you. Bye.